Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory, the Covenants of the Gods, Chapter 11, Money versus Mammon.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. We talk about the Kingdom of God from several different viewpoints. What it is, what it is not. How it works, how it doesn't work. Are we in it? Are we seeking it? Is it a real place? Is it a real way of life? Early Christianity was called the way. And that's exactly what it was. It was a way of life. It was different than the way of life offered to us by most governments of its time. It was a kingdom. It was a government. It simply was not a government like the other nations. We were told by Christ not to be like the nations, the other nations, the Gentiles. That's what Gentiles means if you're translating it from the word ethnos, the other nations. And Christ was teaching a different way. It was in conjunction with the way that John the Baptist was teaching. It was in agreement with the way that Moses had taught. And in fact, it was in agreement with the way in which Abraham had come out of Ur and Haran. Men continually go back to systems that are anti-Christ, contrary to the ways of Christ. And in order to get them back there, there has to be a lot of people out there telling them that they're okay, that they're doing what Christ wants, or they're doing what Allah wants, or what God wants, or what Moses wants. The fact is today, almost all these religions come out of Abraham originally, and none of them are doing what Abraham, Moses, or Christ taught. They're doing something quite different. People at the time of Christ, the Pharisees who were running the show in Judea, were not in agreement with Moses because they were not in agreement with Christ. They had done a lot of things contrary to the way that Moses had laid down for the people. And one of those things that they were doing was subjugating the people to an exercising authority through the government that they had created. That was a religious government. Almost all governments are really religious. We don't like to talk about it in that sense. But the United States government is a very religious government. It has its own creed. It takes care of the widows and orphans, which is the only good description of pure religion in the Bible. It only talks about religion five times. One time it talks about it in a good sense, and that is the religion of the pure religion that takes care of the widows and orphans and needy of their society while remaining unspotted from the world. And of course, the world they're talking about is the world that exercised authority, constitutional orders, and governments that forced the contributions of the people, something Samuel said was foolish when Saul tried it. Somehow or other, modern Christians say, oh no, government is over here, church is over here. Christ just wants you to believe. He doesn't care if you do. But Jesus says, not those who say, Lord, Lord, but those who do the will of the Father are my brothers. So most of these churches are not the brothers to Christ. They are not preaching Christ. The person they are holding up for people to see and say, this is Christ, is not Christ. It is the antithesis of Christ because it does contrary to the ways of Christ. If you love Christ, you would keep his commandments and do the will of the Father. It is not the will of the Father that you covet your neighbor's goods through the agencies of institutions which you create with your own hands. It is not the will of the Father that you oppress the stranger in your midst for your welfare. It is not the will of the Father that you murder the innocent, make unjust wars. It is not the will of the Father that you go under the authority of others. The slothful shall be under tribute. God does not want you to be slothful, but yet you are. And there are many ways in which you can oppress the needy and the stranger in your midst, people you don't even know. You can do that through the institutions you create, you acquiesce to, and you believe in. You say you believe in Christ, but really, that's not where you put your faith. You put your faith in the institutions that you create. If you really believed in Christ, you would believe in faith, hope, and charity, and you would not depend upon benefits supplied to you by forcing your neighbor to comply and contribute to your welfare. Because you have done that, you have been snared back into bondage. The book I wrote first on this journey, first book I wrote, was The Covenants of the Gods. It has about 15 chapters, and it covers things like the difference between holy matrimony under the authority of God and marriage under the authority of the state. Those are not the same thing. Those are two completely different things. They are different. One is instituted by God. The other is instituted and controlled and put asunder by men, something Christ said we were not to do. But we give authority to men to do that because we go and make covenants with them, contracts with them. It also talks about legal and lawful. The fact that everybody in America has a legal title to their land instead of a lawful title to their land. And by definition, that does not include the beneficial interest of their property. Therefore, if they want the beneficial interest of their property, they must pay for it, which is a use tax, which is usury, which is also forbidden in the precept upon precept of God. You are not entitled to the milk and honey of your land. Someone else is entitled to that because you are subject people to the gods of another faith and allegiance, and you have been led into that by people that preach half a gospel and have created a great delusion in our midst that the gospel is about being dead and taken up to heaven, when Jesus said it's for the living, not for the dead. So how is it that you can rob all the people in your community with never leaving your home? Acquiesce to systems of mammon and usurious systems of mammon. And everybody in the whole country can get robbed every day without ever even leaving their house. And that's done every day through a thing called inflation. Inflation is robbing everyone as we speak. Before this program is over, everybody in the United States will be robbed. Some of the value that they have placed in their pockets, in their drawers, in their banks, and wherever they put it, will have decreased. And their value and their treasure and their wealth will have diminished. And that is the way it's going to be. There's nothing you can do to stop that between now and the end of this program. In one of the chapters of the book, The Covenants of the Gods, we have a chapter called Money versus Mammon. Everyone likes you to think that mammon is money. Well, no, it's not. Mammon is an Aramaic word that means entrusted wealth. Money is not necessarily entrusted wealth. Money, you can give it away, you can spend it, you can use it. It's just a way. What is money? A silver coin, a gold coin, we say that's money. Federal Reserve note, we say that's money. Money is what you use to exchange for other things that would be more of a symbol of wealth. Rather than the actual, it's somewhat different than bartering, but not. Okay, now I'll show you why. There's two different kinds of money. There could be hundreds depending on how you break it down, but there's one kind of money called commodity money. That's where what you're using as that exchange unit has value in itself. It has some sort of intrinsic value. Silver and gold coins would be commodity money. There could be other commodity monies like sacks of wheat and sacks of flour. Those could be considered almost commodity money. You know, a pig, that's more in line with what we call barter. And the reason why gold and silver and copper became units of money was because of the fact that they had an intrinsic value. It required labor to get them into a state where they could be used to make everything from pots to jewelry to what have you. And so it had an intrinsic value. And because people wanted to use it, it was very portable. It didn't burn up. If it was caught in a fire, you know, after the fire you go through, and it may have melted your coin, but there it is. So it was very long lasting. It wore pretty good. And so it became a very practical form of money. The more people wanted it, the more valuable it was. And it could actually increase in value while it sat in your pocket, simply because someone else was born into the community that wanted some money. Now, wanting money is not bad, because money is food. Money is clothes. Money is a house. Money is, you know, medicines for the sick. And it is a way in which to interact with one another in a good and wholesome fashion. There's nothing evil about money. The love of money more than your neighbor, that would be bad. But anyway, that's commodity money. Now, mammon is not commodity money. Mammon is entrusted wealth. And that brings us to another kind of money, which is not really money, but it is used as money. And I'll give you a few quotes here. All the perplexities, confusion, and distress in America arise from downright ignorance of the nature of coin, credit, and circulation. Now, that was actually John Adams in a letter to Thomas Jefferson back in 1787. I think that's still true. People don't understand that a Federal Reserve note is not money. It is used as money, but it's a promise to pay money originally. It may not be a promise anymore. It may be a note from liars. That's what it may be. It says, gold in the hands of the public is an enemy of the state. That was Adolf Hitler. He thought you needed to take gold out of the hands of the people because it was an enemy of the state, because it gave power to the people and weakened the state in relationship to the people. But in America, the people are supposed to be the state. They aren't anymore. But they should be. But who took the gold out of the hands of Americans when Hitler was rising to power? It was FDR. They went off the gold standard there for American citizens. Now, the United States was still on the gold standard for many, many years after that. But they actually went out and confiscated gold bullion from citizens because the country was bankrupt. Why was the country bankrupt? The country was bankrupt because, actually, let's put it really the fault where it belongs, is because of you, the people. You had allowed and acquiesced to a government of exercising authority called the United States federal government. Those people of power were more interested in themselves than serving the people. And so on Christmas Eve, which is a good reason why we do this on this show, on Christmas Eve, they instituted the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve created debt and put the United States into debt. And the United States had to have some sort of surety for that debt. And eventually that surety ran out and we had to put more surety in. And then that ran out and we had to put more surety in. And eventually everything collapsed. And you know what they used for surety? They used you. You have become a surety for debt because you are a U.S. citizen. You weren't a U.S. citizen. There were no U.S. citizens like you were a U.S. citizen back in the 30s. If you were back in 1830, no citizens existed like that because you had to have the 14th Amendment in order to create the type of citizenship that you could have, where you could become a part of the federal government. Because the people were never a part of the federal government. This is all goes back to why we don't understand. I can jump all over here. We could go. We have a series up that you can get, Constitutions, Contracts, and Covenants, or it might be reverse that I can ever remember, but it's the CCCs we call it here. We have an MP3, but we also have free, you can read the series on our website. It will show you exactly the history of what was going on with the creation of the Constitution in the United States and the institutions that came out of that and the ideas that came out of that over several hundred years and the changes that came out of that in this organic Constitution that moved people from a free republic to a subject democracy, which is where people are today, where, you know, a portion of your labor can be taken away without your consent, where you don't own the land in tenure or allodial title anymore, but only the legal title. You have moved from that free state that we were moving in and towards in the early days of America to a subject population that is actually enslaved. Covenants of the Gods show you that in employee versus enslaved. We try to show you each of these subjects in their history, both before the United States was created, during the changes that took place in the United States and its citizenry, and afterwards, which is where we are today. Now, the Covenants of God shows that problem from many different viewpoints. Money is one of those viewpoints. Federal Reserve is causing tremendous amounts of inflation. We have somebody running for the president of the United States now called Ron Paul. A lot of people are putting their faith and hope that Ron Paul will be able to turn this country around and change things. I don't think he can even get close to the presidency without somebody probably shooting him, because what he would like to do will turn the world upside down. Christ tried that, and they, of course, killed him. But Christ had a plan. And he went out and taught the people that plan before he went to Jerusalem, because the people needed to know what to do when they kill the shepherd, when they kill the spokesman. And unfortunately, American people don't know what to do because they're not preaching the gospel in the churches. They haven't for years. They have concealed the truth about the Bible in all types of religious superstitions and distractions and rituals and ceremonies and philosophies and what have you. But it's all right there. It's all right there in the text. The ways of the kingdom of heaven. That's what we're supposed to be preaching, the kingdom of heaven and his righteousness, so that people can seek it. And I see in America there's an awakening where a lot of people are beginning to seek it, but there's nobody out there showing them how it works, the mechanics, the functionality of it. And of course, that's what the church was appointed to do and created to do, because back in those days of Rome and Judea, the people had followed the same way that we have followed today. The same way they had followed to bring them into the bondage of Egypt, which is where you are at now. Remember, in the bondage of Egypt, they only had to pay 20% income tax to the government. And they called that bondage. Today, people pay twice or three times that, and they call it freedom. But that's because they're comfortable. But they will not remain comfortable, because all these systems collapse. All these systems decay. All these systems lead to tyranny. It's only the system taught by Christ, by Moses, by Abraham, that can lead you to the perfect law of liberty. But you have to go that way. I can tell you how to do it. I can write books on how to do it. The book Thy Kingdom Come shows how it was done. The Free Church Report shows how you can begin that process. And we make these available for free. I mean, I'm not going to print them up tonight for you for free, but you can download them on the net for free. But you got to do the study. You remember that the tribute, those that are under tribute because they've been slothful. The kingdom is not for the slothful. The kingdom is for the diligent. Proverbs says, the slothful shall be under tribute. Only the diligent shall bear rule. And not rule over me or me over you, but rule over yourself. You don't even have the right to make decisions for yourself because you've gone back into bondage. But Christ was showing us a way out and a way to stay out. And we haven't listened. We haven't been taught. Again, I believe that there is a real awakening in America today where people are beginning to understand and comprehend the gospel in their hearts before they hear it in their ears, which is really where you need it, because that's where the kingdom starts, is in your heart. If you don't have the heart of Christ, the kingdom is not going to be attractive to you. You're going to fall along the wayside. You're going to give it up, because it is a burden. It is hard. But compared to what they have in store for you, it is light. Beware lest you lose the substance by grasping at the shadow. Federal Reserve notes are a shadow. They used to say on them, redeemable in lawful money. If they're redeemable in lawful money, they're not lawful money. Now, they were still redeemable in lawful money. You could actually go in and get almost a $20 gold piece for about a $20 Federal Reserve note up into the 70s. But not if you were a U.S. citizen. HJR 192 said citizens couldn't do that because citizens were surety within the debt. They were within the trust. They were within the incorporated association of the United States because they had a new citizenship. They had been registered at birth. They had applied for benefits of benefactors who exercise authority in order to provide you with that common welfare. So the shadow of value is a Federal Reserve note. And you have lost your substance. You no longer have it. You know, there's all kinds of quotes I could go through. Interest is the invention of Satan. You'd be surprised who said that originally. That was Thomas Edison. Americans will never be destroyed from outside. If we falter and lose our freedom, it will be because we destroyed ourselves. You know, that's Abraham Lincoln. There's so much to understand about this. They're not teaching your children in the school. They didn't teach you when you went to school. You have to go out and study it yourself. And that's why we put this information together, so that you can begin to understand it. Of all controversies for cheating the laboring class of mankind, none has been more effective than that which deludes them with paper money. Daniel Webster. Isn't that amazing that they're talking about being deluded with paper money? It had such a bad reputation back then, and now it's the only kind of money people know. I've gone into grocery stores and been checking out as I said, can I pay this with a note or do you want real money? And of course they immediately say, oh no, you have to pay real money. We don't take notes here. And I says, oh, so you want this money? I hold out some coin, real silver coin, and you don't want this money? And I hold out a $100 bill. And then they say, oh no, we take that. And they point to the $100 bill because that's what they want. And of course, then I get to say, well, this is a note. This isn't real money. This is a note for money. You know, this is only legal tender, a binding offer, but it's not real money. It's used as money, but it's not real money. Used for money would be a better way to say that. And then I get to give my little speech there in about 120 seconds. And then everybody in line gets to hear that. Of course, they think I'm a kook sometimes, but some of them, you know, they think, you know, I heard something interesting. You know, you start resetting the cogs in their thinking. They begin to re-examine. They don't have an answer yet. And in the book, The Covenants of the Gods, we don't actually give you the answer to the problem. But half of obtaining an answer to a problem is understanding the problem. You need to understand what the problem is. Banking institutions are more dangerous than standing armies. Thomas Jefferson. Now, he thought that was interesting. Banking institutions are more dangerous than standing armies. You know, that's a very drastic statement. But today, our entire society is controlled by banks. We're recently having all these difficulties and fears that have come about because of banks having certain loaning practices. The fact is if you wanted to buy a house, you should go to church and borrow the money from your congregation through a credit union set up by your congregation and your congregations of congregations. And we could do that right now if people would get together and work to do that. We have volunteers standing by right now to help us do that. We just need to get a few more people on board to work in that direction. And we can create a credit union instead of a bank. You know, one of the things, wherever you go in the world, there are credit unions everywhere. And the one thing that you constantly find in the laws is that you are not allowed to call a credit union a bank. Credit unions are not fractional reserve. Credit unions can't loan out anything they don't actually have. Credit unions cannot make a profit. That's an interesting thing I discovered. They cannot make a profit. If they make a profit, they have to give the money back to the people. If they accidentally, you know, take in more money than it costs to run the credit union. And the board of directors in the credit union, seven people, you know, just like in Acts, where they needed seven people to help them take care of the daily administration. Seven people who are on the board of directors, they can't earn any salary. They can't receive any money or gratuity for their services. That's amazing. And you actually see, if you study history, that Ephesus, which was a world bank, wasn't a world credit union, it was a world bank, underwriting country after country, over 127 countries, and their social security systems, accused the Christians of robbing the temple at Ephesus, which was the bank with this big vault down below. It actually coining money. You know, they weren't going to church and singing there to Diana. They would have stockholders who would go and meet there, see how much money they were making, because this was an insurance company and a underwriter for social insurance programs. Very sophisticated system. But the Christians were robbing them, accused of robbing them. And later on, there was another accusation, you know, about 100 years later, that it wasn't included in the Bible, but it's a matter of history. Seven men who gave up their wealth and became the servants of the people were arrested in Ephesus and put to death. Because they were what? Robbing the bank. They weren't breaking into the vault. They were showing an alternative system, which flourished despite their abuse and was very essential when Ephesus fell. Because it had created a subculture, a sub-economy, a system that survived the collapse of the Roman Empire. Something that has repeated itself in the days of Nimrod, in the days of Egypt, in the days of Cain and Lamech, and will repeat itself here, because you either are going towards the kingdom or away from the kingdom. And so we're going to talk more about going toward the kingdom when we return, and more about the ways in which you go away from the kingdom, which you don't want to do. Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. We're talking about Money versus Mammon, one of the chapters of the book, The Covenants of the Gods. And one of the things that it says in there, and it quotes Thomas Jefferson again, fear can only prevail when victims are ignorant of the facts. Well, today, fear seems to be prevailing in this country. This country has gone to war with Arab countries around the world because they fear them. I remember being in someone's living room and they said, oh, we have to go over there and fight. And this is way back when that war began. And they said, we have to go to war because if we don't, they're going to come over here and take this country over. And at the time, I was standing in their living room and they were watching TV. It was the news, and they were showing the Afghan army charging up a hill on horseback. And I said, there's the army. How are they going to take over this country? And what would it look like if they took over this country? What would they do? Take some of your freedoms away, make you get special IDs, force you to pay income tax. Actually, income tax is absolutely forbidden in the Quran. There was no income tax in Iran because it's forbidden. As a matter of fact, even I think the taxes on your car, such as license stickers, you get the, they give you a license, but it's a one-time deal and you got it forever. You don't have to pay for it because that's a use tax again, and that's forbidden in the Quran. That's usury. They know that. I'm not saying that everything that goes on over in those countries are moral or good, but everything that goes on in China is not good either. And China has favored trade status, but somehow or other we have to invade these Arab countries. And sometimes they may have more in common with us. You know, I mean, how many of you people have been to those countries and talked with those people? Sure, there's radicals there in those countries. We got radicals here in this country. You don't have violent people in this country who want to do something terrible to other countries? Well, the fact is, we do have violent people in this country that want to do terrible things to other countries and kill thousands and thousands of people in other countries and blow them up and change their way of life without giving them any choice in the matter, any real choice in the matter. And that's common. Men have tried to do that for centuries. That's called oppressing the stranger in your midst, you know, and it's forbidden by God. But fear can only prevail when victims are ignorant of the facts. And there's a great deal of ignorance in America today. Another Thomas Jefferson statement, he who knows nothing is nearer to the truth than he whose mind is filled with falsehoods and errors. One of the things that Thomas Jefferson warned against was reading the newspaper. The newspaper was a source of such lies. He warned you about reading the newspaper. Of course, he hadn't even seen TV yet. TV could be extremely full of lies and you wouldn't even know it. We don't get TV reception out here. We occasionally see it, but we do an awful lot of research on our own. We've done that since we began homeschooling our kids. And instead of using the modern history books, we were buying little older history books. I got them all the way back to the 1800s. And I can tell you that history has changed. It's amazing how you can change history of the past to look like something different in the future. It's kind of a 1984 trick, and it's well done. You know, as I said before, mammon is an Aramaic word, mammon, meaning wealth, but specifically something entrusted to safekeeping. Well, Federal Reserve notes supposedly at one time represented wealth that was in safekeeping, somewhere in Fort Knox or someplace like that, and you had this, but actually that wasn't. What they're doing is they had a surety somewhere. At one time, gold in Fort Knox might be a surety for that debt. National parks might be a surety for that debt because that's a federal property and this is a federal program. But then the more and more you get things into this surety pool, this cauldron of government, the more and more things they can tack on to this surety for debt. And now they tell you right out, this is the debt that you owe, you know, trillions of dollars. You know, you can go to websites and see the numbers just climbing rapidly as your debt increases. You know, and you got guys like Ron Paul talking about doing away with the Federal Reserve and income tax. And people say, oh, we couldn't do income tax. We wouldn't have any money for government. No money that is collected in income tax goes to pay for any services in government. He says that and just goes right over people's heads. That's part of that ignorance. Now, the fact is if he could do all the things that he would like to do, which he says he can't do because he doesn't want to increase the power of the presidency, this country would dive rapidly into an absolute economic chaos, which it is not ready for. But it may head there anyway, with or without Ron Paul. I admire the guy. I think he's great, the things that he is saying. And he needs to bring that to the attention of the public. But if you rest your faith on one man, you are headed for tyranny. We saw that way back with Kennedy, who tried to do something about the Federal Reserve, started issuing U.S. notes, which is kind of monetizing our money again, and he suddenly gets shot. We just listened to a speech that he gave back in April of 1961 in front of the United Press or somebody, you know, press club or something there. You can actually download the whole thing on the net. And my son, you know, as part of the education of my family, we listened to it. And they didn't want to say a word during the playing of that audio because they were so impressed by the way in which he was presenting himself. He talked about a monolithic conspiracy that was more dangerous than anything we ever faced, and the people needed to be educated about it. And of course, before he could do that, he died. And that was way back then. And he didn't seem to have nearly the public enthusiasm for change that we see in men like Ron Paul. But that's another story. We're interested in the kingdom. I actually have heard some of the things that Ron Paul says is very close to the kingdom. But anyway, in the Bible it tells us, my son, if thou be a surety for thy friend or someone. You got to remember these are translations. If thou hast stricken thy hands with a stranger, with the words of thy mouth, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. Remember what Jefferson said about banks being more dangerous than armies? You're getting the same story right there in the Bible, back in Proverbs 6. Lots of stuff. You know, Proverbs, that's where we got the slothful shall be under tribute, which is where all Americans are today. You used to say, as I said on the notes, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, and is redeemable in lawful money at the United States Treasury or at any Federal Reserve Bank. It's not lawful money. That's a concept that people can't even begin to understand. Federal Reserve notes are not lawful money. They are legal tender, but they are not lawful money. They're not redeemable in lawful money for you or for the Sheikh of Saudi Arabia anymore. But he's got another deal going, which will collapse also eventually. But in the meantime, there's going to be a lot of Americans, a lot of people all around the world that are going to suffer under $20 a gallon gas or whatever it gets to. And of course, that's going to affect the food. It's going to affect the dollar. We're rapidly plummeting towards in the United States to the existence of a third world country and economy. You couldn't do more to destroy the American economy. And the United States government is doing it. But it's not really their fault. It's your fault for being so ignorant and not learning how this all works. You know, there is a distinction between a debt discharged and a debt paid. When discharged, the debt still exists, though divested of its character as a legal obligation during the operation of the discharge. Something of the original vitality of the debt continues to exist, which may be transferred even though the transferee takes it subject to its disability incident of the discharge. Now that's a little complicated. The fact that it carries something which may be consideration for a new promise to pay, which is what those notes are, so as to make an otherwise worthless promise a legal obligation. Otherwise worthless promise, a legal obligation, makes it the subject of transfer by assignment. In that process, that's actually Stanek versus White. In that process, you see what's going on with the Federal Reserve notes. They're discharging debts. You cannot pay a debt with a note. You can only discharge it. Another part of Stanek versus White states that, but it's a fundamental fact of law. If I give you a note that's promising to pay, have you been paid? No. A promise to pay is not payment. Simple. This is first grade stuff. Forget all the complicated jargon. It's simple stuff. How can you buy a lawful title if you don't use lawful money? Now, some people are going around trying to buy land using some silver and gold and say, well, I bought this land with silver and gold. That's a lawful money. But it's already been recorded that it's a legal title. And the thing that you're buying, you're only buying a legal title with lawful money. You can't turn a legal title into a lawful title unless you buy the guy that's still a part of the discharge. It's a surety. You're not going to get it by paying that. I mean, I think it's a great practice, but it's not going to work because it's already recorded in a matter of record that you're only purchasing a legal title from the legal title holder. And you cannot turn, that would be unjust. And they are sworn, this is one thing they are sworn to do, is maintain that trust, which is mammon. Mammon is trusted wealth. Now, Christ said to be friends with the unrighteous mammon, for when it fails, you may be suitable for more righteous habitations. So there is a righteous mammon and an unrighteous mammon. What is the righteous mammon? That is the kingdom of heaven, which is at hand. In the kingdom of heaven, we don't have a big gold treasury somewhere. You know, it's a foreign government that can actually exist and operate right in this country, legally, right in this country, as long as it sticks to the purposes of Christ, which is to set all men free by teaching men the ways of freedom and righteousness. Remember, you have to seek the kingdom and his righteousness. And that's a whole process, and we're not going to be able to cover all that tonight. I'm just giving you little tidbits in the, you know, looking at the chapter. Again, you know, if you don't have lawful title to property, you only have a legal title, you don't have the beneficial interest, which in the Bible was called the milk and honey. Another idea that I bring up in that chapter is I read a definition of a criminal. Here's a definition of a criminal. I love this definition. A person with a predatory instinct who has not sufficient capital to form a corporation. That's a criminal. If you form a corporation, you might not be called a criminal. You could be called a banker or whatever, a fiduciary, all sorts of things, but you wouldn't be called a criminal. That's legal. Legal criminality. Now, another quote. No one is considered to be solvent unless he can pay all that he owes. Can you pay that debt that's, you know, when you go to those little websites and you see those dollars, just those trillions of dollars that, I mean, what do you use to pay it with? The fact is they're changing the nature of mammon. They're changing the nature of trust. You hear it, changing the nature of Social Security. Social Security system is why you don't own your labor. That's the mechanism by which, you know, there's guys out there saying, well, where's the law? The law is contract. You waived a right to a portion of your labor in order to obtain benefits. I mean, it's in the Bible. David told you, Paul told you, what should have been for your welfare has been a snare, a stumbling block. You know, through covetousness, they shall make merchandise of you, human resources. The greatest destroyers of freedom are the givers of gifts, gratuities, and benefits. Now, that's not in the Bible, but that's Plutarch. This is the way it works. You apply for the benefit there is so that you have an entitlement. They have an entitlement to you. Isn't that what happened in Egypt? They find themselves short of provisions because they had cast their own brother into prison and were not ill-prepared. They were ill-prepared for the famine. So what are they going to do? Now they have nothing, but Joseph has a bunch that he can offer them, food and shelter and all this stuff, but he doesn't own it himself. He's working for this other guy, the Pharaoh, who trusted in Joseph's words and now is becoming the richest man in all the world. His brothers didn't trust him. They actually threw him into bondage, so they themselves went into bondage. Some people think somehow the Israel was not into bondage back in the days of Joseph. Certainly they were. Joseph was in bondage. Everybody went into bondage but the high priests, the priests of the temple. And what was the temple? It was a bank. That's right. It was a bank. And they went into bondage because they didn't have provisions for themselves. They couldn't take care of themselves and they were going to die. So they said, okay, if you provide for us, we will give you our cows, our animals, our land, our right to own land. and even our own labor, they all went into bondage. Didn't that happen during the Depression? Hey, you bail us out, we'll get a Social Security number, which is an employee identification number. They always tell you, you know, all the, you know, I think great things of these people who have the courage to question them, but they're coming up with the wrong answers. They haven't done sufficient research. I think some of them might know, but they still want to ask the question, and that's fine. But we need to know what the real question is and what the real answer is. It's in the covenants of the gods as far as what's really going on. But they say, oh, well, income tax is only for federal employees. That's another thing you always hear. Is that the 861, 868, 861 argument? Don't you have a federal employee identification number? Well, isn't only federal employees eligible for a federal employee identification number? Social Security number is defined as a federal employee identification number. So yeah, the income tax is for you because you're numbered as one of those employees of the federal government. Now, you're not a direct federal employee, you're an indirect, but you can only be hired by men with a what? Federal employer identification number. Those are the taskmasters that are set over you. They're all regulated by federal laws, so this must be a federal contract and regulation. Figure it out. You're back in Egypt. You're back in what Rome became. You need to go back to what the Kittim, which were Rome, was before they fell into this imperial quagmire, this cauldron, this place where they were part of this civil authority, where they were the flesh. You know, they talk about that in the Bible. We are the flesh. Going back to eat from the flesh pots of Egypt. We were never to return to the bondage of Egypt. Never return to the Egypt, it says. And if we ever created a government, it was to do nothing to return us to that. But it has. Because we don't understand things like monetary policies and monetary systems and what is real. We don't care about it. We know what's on the TV. We know the TV schedule. We know who's playing what and when. We know what the ball scores are. We know who's playing in the World Series. But we don't know that we have delivered our children into perpetual bondage in a system so corrupt that it will collapse and cause the deaths of millions upon millions of people. We don't even know the gospel of the kingdom, which came to set men free, to return every man to his possessions and every man to his family. Which takes us to the first chapter of the book, Covenants of the Gods, which is holy matrimony versus marriage. Even our churches have incorporated, which brings us to the last chapter of the book, Covenants of the Gods, which is the body of Christ versus the body of the state. If you're a corporation of the state, you're not a corporation of Christ. What is a corporation? It's a corpus, body. That's the Latin word for body. If you're a corpus of the state, you're a part of the body of the state. You're not a church separate from the state. You're one of its children. You're not one of Christ. The state tells us that. If you incorporate under the authority of this act, the Corporation Act, all other previous incorporation is null and void. As if it never happened. Very simple. What is a corporation? Two or more people gathered together for a particular purpose, as if they were one person. Under a pre-existing authority. Well, the pre-existing authority for the church is Christ. Unless, of course, it reincorporates under the state. Now, all other previous incorporation is null and void. Is there even a church left in the United States? Is there a church left anywhere in the world? Because they all incorporate. So should a church be an unincorporated association? Absolutely not. That's not what Christ created. The congregation of the people might be an unincorporated fellowship, but that fellowship is absolutely free in the eyes of the church. It has no exercising authority. It cannot, because Christ said we were not to do that. But they may have other obligations. They may have gone into bondage in other places. But I tell you that if you learn the ways of Christ, if you follow the ways of Christ, They will do exactly what they did in the days of Christ. They will cast you out. And if you are true to those ways, you will be prepared to be cast out. And when the unrighteous mammon fails, you will be suitable for more righteous habitations. Right now, we're not ready. We're not ready for freedom. We wouldn't know how to live in a truly free country as a free people without becoming so weak and scattered and devastated that we would be fit prey for almost any country, any place. We're a scattered flock. We're all over the place. We don't love our neighbor as much as we love ourselves because we don't even know who they are. And that is the purpose of the congregations, not to make 500-man congregations where you don't know anybody, but to make 10 family congregations where you know everybody intimately. And they're bound together not by contracts and covenants and constitutions, but by faith, hope, and charity, because they are there for their neighbor as much as they are there for themselves. Not only their neighbors within the congregation, but the congregations that congregate together. The wheel within a wheel. We have a DVD on the structure of the church that explains some of this potential that we can do if we would come together and form the government of God, which does not exercise authority. It's all voluntary. It's all grassroots. It's upside down from what you used to seeing as a government. But it actually worked in Europe for hundreds and hundreds of years. All over Europe. Germany. France. Which wasn't called France then, but Great Britain. You never hear about it in your history books. We talk about it in the book Thy Kingdom Comes. We show how it worked. How it was almost invincible. But for some reason or other, which we constantly do, we stray from the formula. Today, the churches aren't even teaching the formula of Christ, the way of Christ, the solution of Christ, the salvation of Christ. They're just saying, believe in this image and you're saved. But they don't even give you the true image of Christ, who really loved you and wanted you to be free souls under God. Are men the property of the state, or are they free souls under God? This battle continues throughout the world today. I quote that over and over again in the Covenants of the Gods and in Thy Kingdom Come. And everybody has probably heard it, but most people don't know where it's from. But that's what we need to learn. We need to learn the ways of Christ, the ways of the kingdom, and how that righteousness can work in our lives today as it did so many centuries ago when it set the early Christians free, when it set the Israelites free from Egypt, when it set those many souls that followed Abraham from Haran into freedom. Because God wants you to be free under the perfect law of liberty. But that means you must bind yourselves together by faith, hope, and charity. And that's what the church is really supposed to be doing. But instead it sends you to benefactors who exercise authority, delivers you back into bondage. But that's not the church of Christ. That's not his church. And that is where God wants you to go and strive to go. That is the path that Christ laid out for us. Not only to become free, but to set others free because we care about others as much as we care about ourselves. I believe that there are more instances of the abridgment of freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachment of those powers than by violent and sudden usurpations. And that's what's taking place in America. We have departed from the ways of Christ, and we have gone back into bondage. None are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe that they are free, and none are more hopelessly condemned than those who believe falsely that they are saved. Christ did come to save us so that we might be free, that we might be forgiven, that we might have access to his salvation. But we need to look at the whole gospel, the gospel of the kingdom. Until we meet again, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.